The following sermon audio is from Missio Dei Church, Cincinnati. More information about Missio Dei Church and our pursuit to be a gospel-centered, city-focused church community can be found at www.mdcincy.org.
Okay, this morning we're starting a new series. It'll take us up until the end of the summer. And if you are new to Missio, this might be something that is new to you. We're doing something that we don't even normally do. The way we typically do a sermon series is we kind of pray through what do we think the Lord should be teaching us and where is that found in the Bible. And the series that we're doing leading into the summer, it's sort of a compilation of what's going on all around the New Testament. And so we are doing it sort of topically. Now that's not the typical way that we do things. Typically, as you know, if you've been tracking with us, we do series that are like the last one that we did, which was The Power of the Spirit. And so we evaluate where is this in the Bible, and then we just truck through those sections of the scriptures that teach us those issues. And that forces us to deal with things that we wouldn't normally want to deal with, right? And so we just did The Power of the Spirit, and we had to talk about the role of women because that's what's in the text. Well, this time we're taking a break from that. We're doing it a little more topically, and that's good because it's leading us into the summer, and we want to talk about how do we go out of here on mission, right? How do we go out on mission? We kind of try to balance this idea of mission and maintenance, and in the cold months, you're not really stirring up a lot of relationships. You're doing a lot of, okay, how's my heart doing? And then the warmer months, you're striking new relationships. So we're just trying to follow that flow of life, contextualize it, and capitalize it, and do the best work with it than we can. And so we've got several elements that we're calling rhythms of discipleship. And this morning's rhythm is going to be about ownership, right? And so each week there's going to be a topic, and we're going to kind of hit the scriptures that way. And then we'll get back to some, I think this summer we're going to do a study in 1 Peter. So look forward to that. But here's how I want to kind of draw us in. I'm going to be in the book of Matthew, and I'll be at the end of the book in chapter 28, Matthew 28. So if you have a Bible, turn there, open your app to Matthew chapter 28. And if you don't have a Bible or an app, we have some in the lobby available for you, or you'll be able to read it on the screen. And while you're turning there and trying to find where in the world is Matthew 28, I want to kind of draw you in to the story by just kind of sharing with you how my weekend went. It's been a great weekend, hasn't it? Right? I mean, beautiful weather. My kids were outside all day yesterday, and that thrilled my heart. There were no screens in front of them, and they were outside all day and being creative, playing with their neighborhood friends. And I spent the day working on building up a new wooden playground in the backyard for them. And I'm realizing that my age is kind of catching up to me. I've been laid up for several weeks, having had surgery and haven't been very active. And so yesterday, all day I'm lifting lumber and swinging a hammer and just building and just finding all kinds of life out of that. And then this morning I woke up so stiff and sore, like my legs are sore, my back, my hands are sore, and I'm like, I'm getting a little too old to like go full gusto after several weeks of not doing anything. But last night, my son Ashton was out, and he was hanging with me, and he holding the flashlight because the sun was going down. I still need to read some instructions, and he just asked if I enjoyed building things, and I told him, I was like, yeah, buddy, that gives daddy life. I love building things. Man, it's something that I don't always have the opportunity to do. A case in point was when we moved to Cincinnati to start the church here. We moved up from North Carolina. We had to rent our home down there. We weren't able to sell it, and turns out for the best, but we didn't have a down payment for a home up here. And so as we were looking for a place to live, we wandered around and we found a house that we liked, and we'd call the realtor and say, hey, here's a house that we're interested in. Would you be willing to sell it to us? The key is if in financing, we're going to have to do a lease to own, which means we're going to sign a rental agreement with you for maybe 2-3 years while we save up our down payment, but we would like to purchase the home. First people we asked, they said, no, can't do that. We don't want to work with you on that. We'd love to have you buy it, but we don't want to finance it that way. Second people, similar story. They just wanted to sell our own. Third people, sure, we'll do that. So we signed a lease. We were going to rent the house for 2 years, and then we were going to close on it and become the owners. And so for the first year that we lived there, I just kind of wandered around the house wanting so desperately to fix things, right? Paint things, knock down walls, tear things apart, rebuild them, because that's where I find life and joy. But here's the deal. I didn't own the house, so I couldn't do any of that, right? You have to become the owner before you can really take primary responsibility for what we do. Now, the blessing of God is that after 1 year, we were able to save up enough money. We saved really aggressively. We were able to close on the home. We closed in early November, or maybe the second week in November, just before Thanksgiving. And by that weekend, I had torn a wall between the dining room and the living room, right? Just in time for Thanksgiving. And so, little marriage tip, don't ever do that, right? Don't do that. Doesn't make your wife happy, right? Because she's got to serve Thanksgiving dinner with dust. And so, but here's the thing. Nothing changed about where my kids went to school, where I parked my car, where I slept. Nothing changed about any of that. The thing that changed was ownership. I became one who was borrowing something that belonged to somebody else to taking primary responsibility for it myself. And one of the rhythms of discipleship is going from being borrowers to being owners. And that's what Jesus is going to push upon his disciples, or teach them to embrace ownership of their faith, not just borrowing faith. And so I'm in Matthew 28, and here's what's going on in the story here. The disciples are gathered around a hillside in Galilee, where it all started. Galilee is the boyhood home of Jesus. It's where he called his first disciples. Jesus has been with these folks for at least 3 years, if we get a good chronology of what's going on in the New Testament. He has been betrayed. He has gone through false trials and false accusations. He has been tortured. He has been crucified, killed on a cross, taken down from the cross, buried in a tomb, and then all of a sudden he's alive again. And he tells his disciples at some point, we don't have a recording of it, but he tells them at some point, hey, meet me on this mountainside or this hillside in Galilee, and I've got something I want to tell you there. And so at some point they do this, and I'm going to pick it up in Matthew chapter 28, verse 16. It says, now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them. Let me pause really quickly. Brief note on 11 disciples. Right? We know that while Jesus was alive, he had 12 disciples, right? But there was one named Judas who betrayed him. He was the primary betrayer of Jesus. And he walked with the 12 no more. In fact, he walked no more. And I find it interesting how quickly we are to sort of like cast him out and say he's not really a part of the in crowd anymore. I love that we sang on Good Friday. My wife brought it to my attention. The words to one of the songs we sang was, Jesus sold you for 30, I would have done it for less. Right? And that's really the posture that we should have and the understanding that we should have. If we're really honest with ourselves, if we were around, most of us would have been like Judas. And so at this point, there's only 11 that are still around. But even among the 11, look at what it says in verse 17. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Here are people that knew Jesus better than anybody in the world, his best friends. They witness all these events of his betrayal, his crucifixion, his death, and then he's alive again. Some of them worship, but some of them are still looking at him like, I think there's a good like case of stage makeup here, right? You can't possibly be the real Jesus. Now, you look like Jesus, and you sound like Jesus, but you kind of smell like you've been dead for 3 days, right? That's kind of what they're doubting, and the point, and I won't stay on this soapbox long, but for those of us that are looking for indisputable evidence that God is alive and moving, I'm not sure that we're going to be convinced if Jesus himself appears to you. How do I know that? Because even the people that knew him, that witnessed all of these things, the closest people to Jesus, were still filled with doubt. And that's why faith becomes such an important thing in the Christian life. Right? Such an important thing. Will you believe this? Will you appropriate this to your life? And so here's what he says to those who are struggling and doubting. Verse 18. Jesus comes to them and he said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. So some are worshiping, some are doubting, doing the thing that we're doing here this morning, right? Some of us are coming in with hearts ready to fall on our faces and worship. And the way you sang this morning, I know some of you, that's your heart. But some of us in here this morning, we're full of fear, we're full of doubt, we're full of uncertainty, right? Some of you were told, hey, let's go to brunch. And they came and picked you up. And on the way to brunch, they're like, hey, I got to make a stop, right? And so they stopped here and they're like, wait, where are we? This is a kind of a ghetto place to eat food, right? And so you've been lied to, but you're here, right? And you're doubting, where is this Jesus thing, right? So here we are, we're gathered, some of us to worship, some of us to doubt, and this is a safe place to do that. And our hope is that you will hear Jesus coming to us and speaking to us and giving us hope and comfort and promises, right? That's the hope of gathering together so that we can go out of here, because that's the next thing that happens. Here's the deal. Jesus doesn't expect us to stay here, right? He doesn't expect us to stay here. Now, if you're reading this in the English, it can get a little confusing because it looks like Jesus is saying, go, therefore, like he's commanding people to go, right? That's not really where the command is in the original language. If you were reading this in the original language, the command is on make disciples. The go, therefore, is actually something that we call in the Greek language a participle. It's an assumptive action. It's something that they're doing. So here's what Jesus is doing. Jesus is going to assume that you're not going to stay in this place of worship and doubt, this gathering. He's assuming that we will leave from here. And he wants us as we leave from here to take a certain posture and to follow a different command. So the assumption is you can't stay here. You can't stay in this place where we come to fall on our face and we have to be scattered. We're going to go about life. And Jesus says, as you're going, do this. Make disciples of all the nations. And the elements of making disciples are baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them. Now, it's important the order that Jesus gives those sort of ingredients to discipleship. The first one is baptizing, right? That's identifying people with God and with his people. That's what baptism is. We're going to celebrate that at the end of our gathering this morning. Somebody's going to be immersed in water and come up out of the water, and there's an identification with that, saying, I belong to God and to his people. And then teaching them to observe. Now, see, many of us, we get this backwards, don't we? We teach them to observe, and then if they've observed faithfully enough, well, then we'll identify them as the people of God. And that's not the way the New Testament works, right? Every letter in the New Testament is about what God has done, which you should be identified with. The victory of Jesus applied to us changes our identity. And then what we get to do is we get to walk that out, right? And so it's, here's what Jesus has done. Here's why it's significant that he died on a cross to remove sins, that he's overcome that, and because of that, live like it, right? You can see this very clearly in the New Testament, particularly with the book of Ephesians. For those of you that aren't students of the book of Ephesians, here's the way it's laid out. 6 chapters. The first 3 are full of God has done this and this and this. He's chosen and rescued and blessed and redeemed and united. He's done all these things. There's only one command in the first 3 chapters. It's called remember, a call to remember. But then in chapter 4, verse 1, the last 3 chapters, therefore, live like it. If this is what's true of you, live like it, right? And so we see that rhythm of identify people with what God has done, right? And as they embrace that, then you teach them to observe. And so often the church, we get this backwards, don't we? We tell people, here's how you're supposed to behave. And if you do it well enough, then God will love you. Then God will love you. That's not mercy. That's not grace. That's not what Jesus was all about. And so Jesus says, this is the way I want you to go. Tell them the good news, and then tell them what it looks like to live that out. Tell them what it looks like to live that out. But here's what he's doing. Because he says, you're not going to go do this alone. You're going to go do this with my presence. Right? I'm never going to leave you. I'm always with you to the end of the age. I am with you. God is sending us with this authoritative sending power that he is going with us. And here's what he's doing. Jesus is commissioning ownership of God's mission. He's saying to God's people, I want you to take ownership of this. Take ownership. As you go, make disciples. Baptize them. Like, bring them into this. Bring them into the ownership of the faith. Bring them into the ownership of God's mission. And I'm going with you, right? I want buy-in from this. That's what Jesus is saying. He wants us to buy in. And here's the struggle we all have. We refuse to own the mission of God, right? Most of us don't own this. It's one of the biggest struggles in the church, is that we don't own the mission. For some of us, what we end up doing is we might think we own it, but we're actually hijacking the mission. We're making the mission of God something it was never intended to be. And so we're taking what God's mission is and we're saying it's actually something else. So what is the mission of God? It's the worship of God, isn't it? Right? I'll say it this way. The church is a tool to advance the worship of God. The church is not the end goal, right? The church is a tool to the end goal, which is the worship of God. And so what we end up doing, some of us, is we actually hijack the mission of God, and instead of making it about the worship of God, we make it about the extension of the church, right? We want our church to expand, and that becomes the end goal. And so what we do, like when we get all bought into mission and doing life, it's all about making the church bigger. Right? And so we want the church to be bigger, definitely, because that means we have a larger tool, but that's not the end goal. The end goal is the worship of God. And so here's how we try to play this out as pastors of the church. We recognize that we're not the only show in town. We're not the only Christians in the city of Cincinnati. We're not the only ones that are worshiping the true God, right? We're not. We're absolutely not. That's why we're part of a bigger movement, right? We're part of the Church of Cincinnati. We recognize that other people are about the worship of God, and that's good, and it should be celebrated. Some of you will connect better to Jesus in other congregations, and that's okay, because God's bigger than us. Now, most of you won't, because we're one of the best shows in town, right? But we can get really sidetracked from the mission of God if we make it not about the worship of God and instead about the expansion of his church, right? Sometimes, and I've been caught up in this myself, we see the mission of the church as being the expansion of theological precision, right? And so if people are going to worship God, they're going to worship him rightly. What's rightly? What I say about God is what's rightly, right? This is how you're supposed to understand him. And so we get really caught up in this is the reason we do this and this is the reason we do that. And if you don't do this, you are incorrect. You view God from a distant position. And I would say, you know what? There's different facets. We have some convictions. One of the biggest convictions is we want to be a church that stands upon very stout theology, right? We want theology with teeth. We don't want those teeth to bite you, though, right? We want it to snap at the enemy, not at us. And sometimes it can get that way. Because you make theological precision the mission of God, and that's not it. Some of us, we make the mission of God moral uprightness, right? We want to change the way that people behave. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. People need to change their behavior, but that's not the goal of the church. It's not the mission of God. The mission of God is the worship of God, and so when we make it about moral uprightness, it can get played out in lots of different ways. Right? Some of you are like, yeah, that's the problem with the church. That's why I don't go to church. Well, here's the thing. You're doing the same thing that you're hearing from the church, right? Because you're saying that what you believe as moral uprightness is actually superior to what you've heard the church say is morally upright, right? And so sometimes that comes across as very, very judgmental. But there are many of us who are judgmental about being not judgmental, right? Really good. Some of us that don't go to church, somehow we've got this doctorate in King James Bible, and the only verse we know is, and it's in the King James English, judge not lest ye be judged, right? It's the only verse you know, and as long as you do that, you're morally upright, and that's the mission of God. God just wants us to not be judging people. It's like, really? Because you're kind of being judgmental about not being judgmental. And that's not the mission of the church. The mission of the church is the worship of God, right? So some of us are hijacking the mission. But many of us are like, no, I understand. It's about the worship of God. And here's where we start to kind of come up short. Some of us, we don't own it. We just borrow it. Some of us borrow the worship of God to get the things that we really want, right? You want peace, you want calm, you want safety, you want power, you want money, whatever you want, influence. oh man, I'll worship God if I can get those things. And tragically, this is a gospel that's being exported to the world by American churches. You want your kids to live, you want famine to disappear, start worshiping God, and that's what will happen. And suddenly we're teaching the opposite of what Jesus taught. We're saying, observe these things, and then God will be identified with you. As opposed to God in mercy condescended to you, offers you grace, now you should live a different way. Right? And so we're worshiping the wrong things. What we're really after is some other mission. And so we'll borrow the mission of God as long as it accomplishes the mission that we're after. And at the end of the day, that does not produce joy or life or hope or peace. Some of us borrow the mission from others, right? We borrow our faith. We borrow our participation in the mission. It doesn't really belong to us. It belongs to somebody that we admire, and we think that, man, if it happened, if it worked for them, maybe it'll work for me. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily, but at some point you have to go from borrower to owner. You have to own it yourself personally, right? For some of you, you grew up in homes where mama and daddy took you to church and they taught you how to behave, and you're still trying to figure that out, but you don't actually own it. You're just doing the things that you were taught. Some of us participate in the worship of God on Sunday, but then here's what we do. We rely on the professional Christians to walk out the mission, right? Here's what I mean by professional Christians. I get paid to do what all of you are expected to do, right? Which is just to be a Christian. Now, there's certain roles that I fill, right, in teaching and equipping and guarding and shepherding, those sorts of things, but I don't think it's any, like, I am just trying to be a godly Christian example that equips other godly Christian examples. But here's what that has a tendency to create, and it's a biblical thing, it's not a bad thing, but here's what it does in the hearts of God's people often, is it lets them come in on Sundays and bow down, fall on their face and worship. But then, Sunday afternoon through Saturday night, they're relying on the professional Christians to do the mission of God, right? And here's a litmus test of how you can evaluate whether or not this is you. I will say this. Most of you don't necessarily disagree with the things that we say. You don't necessarily disagree with the doctrines that we teach, that the values that we hold, the things that we proclaim. Most of you agree. But agreement is not ownership, right? You can still borrow and maybe not be in agreement. So ask yourself this question. When something goes wrong in the context of mission or church or worship or even in your life, who gets the blame for that? If it's not you, you don't really own it. And here's what happens. Pastor Justin, myself, and soon Pastor Payne will also be experiencing this and has to a great degree as being one of our deacons, but stepping into eldership, he'll hear it more. We'll have folks come up, and they'll be displeased about something that has happened either in their life or how we do worship, and they'll come up, and they'll say something to the effect of what you need to do, right? What you need to do or what they need to do. And whenever you kind of take yourself out of this communal assembly, you've taken yourself out of ownership, right? What you need to have is, and then it's usually some program that fits some particular need. And I'm not saying those things are bad or unneeded or that the congregation shouldn't be doing them. But at the same time, I'm looking at my schedule and I'm thinking, man, I'm already working 50, 60, sometimes 70 hours a week. I don't have the margins to do one more thing. And if this is something you want done, let's take some ownership of it. Right? It's not my thing to do necessarily. It's my job to equip you to do it. But most of us, we're just borrowing the mission of God. And we're expecting others to do it for us, especially the hard work for us. So when something goes wrong or something displeases you, who gets the blame? Is it them and those Christians? Or is it we and us? And here's something I would like us to be doing. When people talk with that language, you know there's buy-in. They have ownership, right? Just like when I was walking around my house, when I rented it and something broke down, I called the landlord, right? The AC goes out. Well, it's not my house yet. It's still your responsibility. I need you to get over here, have somebody fix this monster, right? And then I'll be happy and joy-filled. But then when it became my house and the AC went out, I had to replace it, it became my responsibility, not somebody else's. So you see the difference between borrowing, renting, and ownership? Jesus is saying, I want you to own this. As you're going, make disciples of the nations, baptizing them, teaching them to observe, and I'm going with you. Because the cross is vacant, because the tomb is empty, because all authority belongs to Jesus and he is forever with us, we have ownership of the mission. It's not something we borrow anymore. It's not something we hijack. This is something we get to participate in. And here's the thing, we don't need to manufacture ownership of the mission. All authority has been given to Jesus. We inherit ownership of the mission. And so Jesus redeems ownership of God's mission. He redeems it from us when we hijack it from him. He redeems it from us when we just see it as something we get to borrow. And he says, no, I want to give this back to you. This is something you were originally created to walk in, right? Remember in the garden, God looks at Adam and he says, I want you to multiply and fill the earth, subdue it, bring it under the control of God and his people. And we said, no, thank you. I'll bring it under my subjection, but not yours. And then the curse and sin came into the world, and we were broken, and we weren't doing it. And that's why we put locks on doors, and that's why we don't trust people, and all this brokenness is there. But Jesus comes in, and he says, no, I will become the curse of God for you, and I will remove it, bury it in the tomb, and overcome it, and now I give it back to you. And that's what the commission of the church is. It's Jesus restoring ownership of God's mission, which is everything in life is done to worship God. Now, we manufacture little things that we put in its place, and we say, well, I can't own it because of this, and I can't own it because of this. And most of the time, it has very little to do with our own shortcomings, and it has to do with refusing to take responsibility and ownership of God's mission in our lives. Well, these people have wronged me, so I don't have to be faithful to that. Or this is my limit, and so I don't have to be faithful to it. And these are all just excuses. And Jesus is saying, nope, I've overcome all those things. There are no more excuses. I give you back ownership of God's mission. Let's go out of here, make disciples. Let's make worshipers of the God who has come to us in mercy and grace. So what do we do with this? I've got four things, and we'll be done. Number one, we need to be a people who own making disciples in everyday life. We need to stop seeing discipleship, right, as a program. It's not a program. It can be, but when it is, it often gets a little bit cheesy, doesn't it? I mean, when we do discipleship, or when we do like a call to bring people in, it's a little bit manufactured. It's not natural. It's not the way you're doing everyday life. And many of us, we'll keep doing it because we want to see more people going out of here on mission, right? And so leading up to today, we printed off these cards and we said, hey, all you have to do is invite somebody. Here, let's make it easier for you. It's a card, right? And some of you looked at the card and you're like, I'm not giving this to anybody. This is cheesy, right? That's what it is as a program. Now, some of you, like my wife, did a great job with it, and she gathered up little bouquets of flowers and she gave the cards out to the mamas in our neighborhood. Not sure it was very effective, but she did it, right? She did it faithfully. But that's a program, right? That's a program. What we need to do is make it a lifestyle. It needs to be the way that we live life. As we're going, wherever we're going, Jesus is with us. Make disciples. Tell them about the work of Christ. Invite them to participate in it. Second thing, own calling others to the mission. We've got to ask ourselves this question. How am I involving others in worship of God and calling others to join in the worship of God? Right? This can't be that's the job of the pastors. It is one of the things that we have to do, right? I will do that as a pastor, as a husband, as a daddy, as a neighbor. I will do those things. But it belongs to all of us, right? Jesus doesn't just show up and say, all right, I've got 11 of you. Only the people that are believing does this apply to. Go and make disciples. He's telling this to the faithful ones who had been walking with him. And so if we say we believe in Jesus, this is a commission for all of us. We all need to take ownership in it. We all need to evaluate, how am I bringing others into this mission of God, the worldwide worship of God? Thirdly, own boldness. Own boldness. This is a big one. This is an exceedingly big one. Many of us we don't do mission because we're afraid it might fail. Here's the thing. It's really worth failing at, isn't it? It really is. This is a unique time for me because this is about the period of where my church in Asheville was that I was pastoring. When the Lord said, I want you to go ahead and leave there now and do it all over again. Right? This is a scary time. Like, we just hit stability. We just got a third pastor. We're financially okay. Like, it was at that moment we've been working for years at getting this church up and off the ground. I knew I was actually going to get a paycheck the following week, right? That's not always the case, especially in the early days of church planning where you're raising funds and you're just not sure how much of your reserves you're going to have to dip into. And as we're getting stable, the Lord says, I want you to do this over again. And you're going to go back to a place that you hadn't been in for 15 years, where the people that you love and the people that you hope to reach, the story of their lives went on, and they went on without you, and you weren't an integral part of their relationship with Jesus or just even how they did life. And the Lord was saying, I want you to go back into that. You've got no promise that this is going to succeed. And it really came to a head when I was meeting with a denominational leader here in Cincinnati. My purpose was not to participate in the denomination, but simply to see how we can network and encourage one another. And he was all about bringing me into the denomination. I knew it wasn't a great fit. And he kept trying to lure me in with, we're going to give you money, we're going to give you money, we're going to give you money. And finally, the Holy Spirit gave me the boldness to be able to say, look, God's called me to do this. I don't need your money. And at the time, I had nothing, right? And it was okay if I didn't, because it's worth failing at. It was worth failing at to step out and say, God will provide. And now I get to look around and see the fruit of what God has done and what he's doing. I mean, I think we just kicked off multiple gatherings at Easter last year at this time. And I don't know, it's not going to be long before we're going to have to add 3 and then 4 and multiple campuses. I mean, God's breathing on Missio Dei Church. Do we do everything perfectly? No. I know the pastor. He's a jacked up dude, right? And so we're not doing it perfectly, but he's breathing on us. And that's an amazing thing to be a part of. And if it didn't work out, it was worth failing at. Now, here's what we don't want to do. We don't want to set people up for failure. But we don't want to protect you from it either. You might fail. It's okay. You're going to learn amazing things from your failures. How many times does Peter say something silly and upset Jesus? I mean, he failed over and over. But Jesus loved him and was merciful and gracious to him. So you might say things that might upset Jesus. Don't do it intentionally, right? But it's okay. You might fail. It's worth failing at. And if it's worth failing at, go out with boldness. The Lord will pick you up. And that brings us to the fourth point. As we're doing this, as we own making disciples in everyday life, doing it every day, if we own calling others, if we do it with boldness, let's do it with expectation. I want us to own some expectation, right? Don't expect God to let you down. I think one of the things that Jesus says to us often, and you read this in the New Testament, let him who has eyes to see, see. Let him who has ears to hear, hear what the Spirit says. What Jesus is saying is expect God to move. And that's a tough one for us, right? Because some of us are doubting. We're seeing Jesus alive, speaking to us, and we're saying, I'm not sure you're really going to see us through this. And Jesus said, no, just trust me. Just trust me on this one. Expect me to move. Expect me to speak. Expect me to provide. Expect me to bring comfort. I'm always with you. I'm never leaving you. Expect me to show up in those places. And I think the more that we have expectation, the more our eyes are open, the more our ears are open, we're going to see and hear God's doing amazing things. Right? Isn't it amazing how if you're in a group of people, some people see the work of God so clearly and like, this is the hand of God, and others are struggling. And I think the difference is expectation. That's really the only difference. God isn't moving any differently. It's just some people expect it and they see it and others don't and they fail to see it. And so God is saying, no, let's expect him to move. And so I'll close with this question, a few questions. What is the mission of Missio Dei Church? What is our mission, right? Because God wants us to own it. So what is it? Do we even know what it is? I'll give you a little hint. It's on our wall right outside in blue. It's actually in white on a blue wall, right? So it's in blue and white. You can see it. You can read it. But there's a difference in agreeing with it and owning it. And the question is, if you don't know it and you can't articulate it, you probably don't own it. We want you to own it, right? We believe that that is the mission of God. That's where we get the name of our church. Missio Dei means mission of God. We believe the mission of God is making much of his name in the city and in the surrounding areas. We want to be a gospel-centered, city-focused church community. Can you articulate that? And then finally, does it cause you to adjust the way that you live life? Or are you here gathering, some of you, just to kind of worship and borrow the mission for a season? We want you to own it. I think God wants you to own it. And if it's not the one here, like there are churches around Cincinnati, we want you to own the mission of seeing people worship God. That's our hope. That's also our joy. Let me pray for you and give you an opportunity to respond. Father, I pray that you would move in our hearts. Give us a spirit of ownership of your mission. Spirit, if you don't move, we won't respond. And so I pray that you would give that to us. And soften our hearts. Allow us to respond to you in faith, to take ownership, and to say, I want to be about the mission of God in my life. Jesus is alive. I have no more excuses. I'm freed to walk in fullness of joy. It won't always go well. Sometimes I'll fail, but you, God, are merciful and gracious, and you love me. So demonstrate your love. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Amen.